What's he gonna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. Got a president so bad, got to be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad. Now we're all in danger. We got a president so bad, got to be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad. Now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good. Broke the old treaties cause he could. Struck us all around like a hood. Got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. Passionate conservative, my ass, in executions unsurpassed, surplus gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he gonna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from New York City this week that the government does not want you to know. That's right, this week is the Republican National Convention, and just like we went into detail in the Democratic National Convention, it's time for us to discuss what's going on in New York City. And all this week, we're going to have special music. We had all kinds of songs yesterday, as you recall. And this week, in honor of the 500,000 protesters in New York City, conservative estimates say 250,000, but most seem to think it's almost 500,000, we're going to play a demonstrator song every day this week. This song is by Yikes McGee, We Got a President So Bad. We'll be playing those songs every day. And, of course, today is Tuesday, and that means that it's Election Tuesday when we take on the Republicans, and I bring on my favorite Republican guest. He, of course, is Tom Robbins. He is the state chair of the Utah College Republicans. Tom, thanks so much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. Tom, you there? Where is Tom? He should be there, and I don't know why he's not able to hear us right now. We'll have to work out those technical problems. That's very strange. Oh, well, hopefully he'll be back in just a minute. I want to talk about the Republican National Convention and really the themes that I saw happening at this convention. It is 9/11 all the time. It's like September 11, 2001 is Groundhog Day. Every day at the Republican National Convention apparently is September 11, 2001. It's what they want you to focus on. They don't want you to focus on the worst economy since Herbert Hoover, the worst jobs lost since the Great Depression. They don't want you to focus on that. They don't want to talk about domestic issues, education or health care or the environment or how George Bush is taking money from the middle class and giving it to the rich or how, in fact, he spent all your Social Security surplus on the pork barrel politics and so forth that he's giving to Halliburton. Doesn't want to talk about that. No, all he wants to do is talk about 9/11 and okay, that's what they did. They talked about 9/11, and they talked about the war on terror. It's the only things they discussed last night in speeches by John McCain and Rudolph Giuliani. And it's interesting when they discussed the war on terror, because the war on terror, they wouldn't quite say which war they were talking about. You know, what is the war on terror? And in fact, as we go through and explore the speeches of John McCain, the speeches of Rudolph Giuliani, we're going to look and see, you know, what war they're referring to, because I think you will see that just as President Bush, throughout his presidency, has conflated the attacks by Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda on the United States and our war in Iraq as if it were the same war, we see that they talk about this war, and never quite specify what war they're talking about. So it's 9/11 all the time. war on terror without specifying which war, and failure to discuss domestic issues. And one more thing that I noticed, and this actually I got to plug Robert Novak, the right-wing columnist that is not one to often criticize the Republicans, but he said quite clearly what we've been reporting on this show for some time, and that is that George Bush cannot win on his record. That George Bush, no one wants four more years of George Bush. He didn't quite say it that way, but he said that George Bush can't win on his record. He's got to demonize Kerry. And so this entire campaign has become one of not what normally a referendum on the incumbent are, do you reelect the president or not? No, it's all about demonizing Kerry. And I want to talk with you about whether, you know, the campaign by the Democrats having a very positive convention is being outweighed by the negative attacks from the Republicans. Let me see if I got Tom Robbins on now. Tom, you on the line?
Yeah, can you hear me, Mark?
Yeah, I hear you fine. Lost you on the other line, but I got you here. Let me just finish making my point, and then we'll certainly go into whatever you have to say. It seems to me that the Democratic Convention, and I'm going to say that the Democrats made a mistake here, I think. They had a very positive convention. They hardly mentioned George Bush, which is very strange for a referendum on the incumbent. Instead, they talked about all the positive things about John Kerry, about his plans for the future, what he would do. And they barely mentioned President Bush at all. In fact, the only real somewhat negative speeches were Jimmy Carter, who refused to have his speech modified by Kerry, and Al Sharpton, who went off speech. They were the only negative ones, and frankly, those weren't even carried by any of the of most of the media. Fox didn't carry the Jimmy Carter speech, which is amazing by a former president, and none of the major networks covered Carter or Sharpton. So that was a very small part. The emphasis was on being positive. The Republicans, of course, their emphasis is always on being negative. They understand, again, as Robert Novak surprisingly said, if it's a referendum on the president, then he's going to lose. They've got to turn it around. They've got to make Kerry the bad guy. And we saw last night, while John McCain, to his credit, had said in advance he's not going to attack John Kerry, and that was his condition of speaking, Giuliani, who gave, I have to admit, a pretty good speech, I think it was a better speech than McCain's, went on the attack, attacking Kerry. And what I found most interesting was when I was listening to C-SPAN, listening to people who were calling in and talking about negative attacks, most specifically the Swift Boat ads and so forth. And the callers were amazing to me. They said, well, there's negative attacks on both sides, negative attacks on... There were not negative attacks on both sides. The Democrats went positive, the Republicans went negative, and all the American public apparently heard was negative attacks on both sides. So my view is, and I know it differs with the Kerry Edwards campaign, my view is the Democrats have been way too positive. It's time to go negative. It's time to drag up those reports about Bush's past, you know, where he's, which by the way, he's never disputed, you know, where he's drunk and he's threatening his father in a fight and he's arrested at a football game at a fight and you know, for stealing a wreath. All this stuff about Bush's past, but even more so, talking about his present, talking about his flip-flopping on Homeland Security, on nuclear protection, on the 9/11 Commission. Let's bring out some of these negative attacks, because if the American public is going to think both sides are negative no matter what, I say then we Democrats need to go negative. But hey, if you disagree, if you agree, call in, talk to me, talk to Tom, who I know has got a lot to say as soon as I give him the mic. All you have to do is dial 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com, or you can do as many of you often do and just comment right there on the blog for everyone to see. I'll be reading some of your comments on air. So let me just start, Tom, by asking you what you thought of the two main speeches tonight, McCain's, Giuliani's, last night. What were the highlights of the speeches? I don't think you'll tell me low stuff. What'd you like?
I thought it was definitely outstanding. The Republican Party was showcased. It was a great message. Giuliani had such an important impact because people realize that, at least in our lifetime, Mark, that there has not been such a threat or a crisis in America than there has been since 9/11. And Mayor Giuliani was in the thick of it. He was in the eye in the storm, if you will, and he had the ability to firsthand see the response and the leadership of President George Bush and be able to give his view and to be able to give his endorsement. It means a lot to the people of America because they realize that our President George W. Bush had to serve within the toughest time that we have had, at least in our lifetime, Mark.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, there's definitely a contrast between how Giuliani acted on September 11th and how George Bush acted. I think we can all remember that day when George Bush basically looked like a deer in the headlights, kept reading to the children, didn't know what to do till his advisors told him, and then sort of ran out the room and hid in Nebraska. While Giuliani, to his credit, was out there directing firefighters, directing policemen. Giuliani, who, you know, has a was actually going downhill. He'd been caught in an affair, a very messy affair with his wife. He really sort of seen his last days. Really, I have to admit, Giuliani rose to the occasion, as good liberals do. Giuliani, of course, is a liberal Republican, and it's very interesting, of course, that in a very long speech last night that went on for, I think, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, maybe close to an hour, he made no mention, of course, of all the ways he differs with Bush. Giuliani, of course, is pro-choice. Giuliani supports the environment. Giuliani supports gay rights. Giuliani supports gun control. Giuliani supports separation of church and state. All these things that Bush doesn't support, Giuliani didn't go into. And, of course, Giuliani and McCain, what they were doing last night, if anyone has any question what they were doing, is they were running the first speeches in their primary campaign against each other in 2008. Both McCain and Giuliani understand that their ideas are not loved in the Republican Party. McCain, for example, is against pork barrel spending. He's against giving away huge corporate donations to Halliburton. He wants to rein in government spending and not preside over the largest increase in American history, which is under George Bush. Giuliani, of course, is liberal on social issues. He disagrees with George Bush, and both of them have been seen as mavericks, people really pushed out of the Republican Party. And they're trying to win back their bona fides, so, of course, that they can run against each other in 2008. Is there any doubt in your mind, and, you know, we can talk about this 4 years from now, Tom, but is there any doubt in your mind that Giuliani and McCain are both running for president in November 08?
There's definitely people who have had experiences which would allow them to ascend to the office of presidency because of the conditions and pressures that they've been onto it and the success that they've had. Giuliani, I think, had the comment of the night, because a convention is not just for the delegates, but it's a way to be able to give a message to the entire American people, the electorate, that 10% who's undecided. When Giuliani said, in choosing a president, we really don't choose a Republican or a Democrat, a conservative or a liberal. We choose a leader. And in times of war and danger, as we are now in, Americans should put leadership at the core of their decision, choosing George W. Bush. Giuliani had a bird's-eye view, was directly working with the Bush administration at our nation's most critical crisis that we've had in our lifetime, and is able to give his endorsement to George W. Bush. And the American people have been able to see that. They've been able to remember that. And I don't think that they're feeling that they're going to fire George W. Bush, and I think that's why recent polls before going into the convention show movement in the Bush camp.
Well, I concede the point that recent polls have basically taken a Kerry lead and pretty much made it a tie right now, and we can talk about those, and that's a fact. And I think part of the reason for that, as I said, is because the Republicans went negative and the Democrats didn't. And I think that when one side goes negative and the other doesn't, it's like you hit someone below the belt. If you're fighting a fight and someone gets hit below the belt, the first person hit below the belt, that hurts. And like I said, that's why I advocate, and I'd be curious what my callers think, but that's why I advocate the Democrats going negative. But I want to deal with what you said, the first point, which is how Bush helped Giuliani on 9/11. You know, I understand Giuliani's running for president in 08, and I understand that Giuliani, and I won't condemn what he did on September 11th at all. I think he did a very good job. He did the best that he could. But it's very interesting that you didn't name, and Giuliani didn't name, any specific way that Bush has helped New York, and I think there's a reason for that, and that's because Bush has really been very bad to New York. He's been withholding a lot of the money that's been promised. One of the most extreme examples, and this one really there's absolutely no excuse for, and one that I worked on when I worked on the Homeland Security Committee, and that is that on September 11, 2001, when the first World Trade Center crashed to the ground, everyone in America, everyone watching, and you didn't have to be brilliant, everyone knew that the second one was going to fall too. It only makes sense. They were both had airplanes hit them. If the first one fell, certainly the second one was going to fall too. And in the second World Trade Center were hundreds of firefighters risking their lives to try to save others. And what you wanted to say to those firefighters is, you're looking at the television, is get out. You know, you're trying to save others' lives. That's terrific. But you have a half hour left to live. Get out of that building. To save your own lives, you can't save the others above the floor, above where
now,
the plane
hit. Now, does it directly relate to President Bush?
I'm going to tell you why. Because they could not communicate with those firefighters. And the reason they couldn't communicate with them is that New York's communication equipment was so outdated and old-fashioned that because of all the cell phone traffic occurring on September 11th, they could not get through to those firefighters to tell them to get out. So after September 11th, the Democrats and many Republicans, not just Democrats, McCain, for example, supported giving good communications equipment to cities like New York and across the nation. It was a cost of a few hundred million dollars to make sure that in the event of an emergency, a tragedy where all the cell phone lines are full, you could still get through to those firefighters. And to this day, Bush has refused to support that equipment. He says it's too expensive, so they get none at all. And if there's another attack and other lives are lost, maybe then people will realize that George Bush was not helping New Yorkers very much. So I think it's very interesting and not surprising that Rudolph Giuliani did not give specifics about how Bush helped. Instead, he went on and he talked about the Bush war on terror. But he didn't...
It's very clear that when George W. Bush was president, the way that he was able to bring America together, going down, even though potentially faced great danger and risk to himself, down to ground zero, being able to take the megaphone and be arm-in-arm with those who are suffering so much, and to be able to give a clear message to America that we would rise up from the rubble and be able to see a new day and a new dawning for America, was something that can't be taught, was something that doesn't come from somebody who's labeled as stupid or moronic or can't tie his own shoes.
Really?
It's something that the American people caught hold to, and it's the very reason why they're not willing to fire him and to put in his place John Kerry, who hasn't explained his record in the Senate and who no one knows anything about because he refuses to talk about his liberal vote.
Tom, what you say surprises me, because I would think that if I were president, I would do the same thing. I would think that any American would do the same. And in fact, I remember when Bill Clinton, came to the rubble on September 12th, the day after the attack, and I remember thinking, what's taking Bush so long? I think he did the right thing, absolutely. That's exactly what a president should do, stand on the rubble and talk about getting those terrorists. And I was very angry, and I wanted to attack them. In fact, I went in, and I told my boss I wanted to see a declaration of war on the congressional floor because I felt that that's the constitutional way to fight a war. But I'd like to ask you, Tom, which president in our past, name any of them, that you think would not have gone to a site where 3,000 Americans were murdered and avenged it? I mean, you can go back to FDR talking about, you know, Pearl Harbor. Which president do you think would not have gone to the site or not have brought war against someone that murdered 3,000 Americans? Which ones?
Each one of our presidents would have done that.
I think so, too.
The difference is whether or not the American people, because the president himself has a lot of power. That goes without saying. But the American people, he's also a figurehead in which they need to believe and to be able to relate with and to be able to get behind emotionally and be able to feel that they really connect with him. And George W. Bush has been able to do that. I'm not sure if Al Gore would have been able to connect in the same way as George W. Bush would, and I'm pretty sure that John Kerry would not be able to connect in the same way. It's just a matter of being able to reach people. People look at George W. Bush as more of an average Joe, as somebody who does misspell or misspeak, not as polished billionaire type John Kerry, who, you know, is basically eating off the silver platter his entire life.
Well, this is very interesting, because I think what you're doing is you're doing the whole lower expectations move, which is a classic political move. It's like, you know, it's kind of like castling in chess. You're saying, okay, George Bush, he's not to be expected to give a good speech, even though we all know he doesn't write his speeches, and a bunch of people, the best Republican minds, are going to write him a really good speech. You shouldn't expect much from him. He's an average Joe. To me, the average Joe is the guy that went, you know, to Vietnam, not the guy that used the power of his father, a congressman, to get out of it. George Bush has always been, you know, silver spoon. To call him an average Joe, I think, is going a little too far. But let me go to one of our callers and see what they have to say. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Yes, this is Jesus from Michigan.
Jesus from Michigan. Yes, I didn't even know that Jesus lived in Michigan. But what's your point?
I just relocated from California, but
I see.
I'm just wondering how Tom can tell a born-again Christian that they should fall in line with the Republican Party policy that substantiates corporate greed over helping the poor and enables large drug company price gouging of drugs to the catastrophically ill and the elderly, and shortchanges funding for opportunities for children, and rationalizes a bloody preemptive strike, and which is basically an abomination to the golden rule of self-defense. sense. How can Tom tell me that I should be a part of the Republican Party?
I mean, Tom, Jesus definitely talked about poor, talked about the oppressed. I mean, how can a good Christian support these policies?
Well, Gordon, I think that...
Oh, you got the name, too. I suspect it's Gordon as well.
Was it, you know, I'm like, wait, Gordon from Michigan, sounds like it.
Well, you know, Gordon has apparently thinks he's Jesus from time to time, but I think he raises...
schizophrenia, okay?
I think he raised a good point, though, Tom. Why don't you see if you can answer it?
Well, you said, interestingly enough, how can I be a Republican? Democrats are the ones who offer opportunities for children. Well, let's not forget that the Republican Party stands up for the 1.6 million children who are not allowed to be born each year nor killed before they even enter life because of the policies of pro-choice Pelosi and the Democratic Party.
No, I understand. When there's cells...
Before, you know, I've served a mission in South America. I give 10% of my money to charity. But more than that, I think it's that we realize that government is not the best mechanism in order to enact change, and it's not the best way to oftentimes deliver the aid or the necessity that people need. There are programs which in the federal government work. I have a cousin right now who's serving as a Peace Corps volunteer for two years and 3 months in the Vanuatu Islands, which is where the Survivor Series was just recently taped and will air on TV. And she's the only Caucasian there, a very remote place, and she's teaching English. So there's ways to serve within the federal government, but it's not the only way. But you can be a Republican, you can be a conservative, and also be compassionate. I think Laura Bush is going to talk a lot about that tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I hope she does, Tom. But let me be clear. I honor what you've done in your act, and I particularly honor your cousin serving in the Peace Corps. As Teresa Hines Carey said, the Peace Corps is very much the best face of America, and I couldn't agree with her more. This used to be the face of America. People out there trying to help people. The world used to love America for things like that. But I still don't think you answered Gordon's question. You're talking about defending, you know, one-celled creatures that, you know, are potential life. I understand that, and you want to protect those. But then you say that when they come to actual children who need food, who are starving, the kind of people, I have to say that in the New Testament, Jesus took up for feeding starving children, right? I mean, much more than one-celled creatures. There's nothing in the Republican Party for them, is there? You get support from the Republicans from conception until birth, and then you're on your own, right? Right, Tom?
Not at all. In fact, the Republican Party, you know, it would be ridiculous to say that for somehow we're trying to starve children or to not allow them to have the things that they need. As far as drug benefits are concerned, I know that George W. Bush is looking for a report that's supposed to come out from the FDA as far as what regulations perhaps need to be lifted or what needs to be done. You know, the thing is, look at Moscow. They have a situation where they don't have a patent control and things like that. And what major breakthroughs in drug therapy has come through Moscow in the last 10 to 20 years in the former Soviet bloc countries?
Tom, we're only talking about...
to have money for investment to be able to get the payoff.
Well, why are they spending more on advertising than investment? Why are they spending more on all these designer drugs, trying to get you to take Prozac, even if you don't need it, or Viagra, just to make your life... But that's what they're spending all their money on. They're not spending it on investment. Why can't they just go and import drugs from Canada? This is a country that has strong standards and strong regulation, government regulation, things like the FDA, to protect drug safety. Why can't we at least let people in America buy drugs if they want to? They don't have to, from Canada. Why is our president against that?
Well, the President of the United States is obviously worried about the health and safety of America.
No, he's not.
In addition to that, Mark, we're looking at an FDA report, which should be, I forget what date it's going to be released on, which will have some recommendations as far as the compatibility of Canadian drugs and the different things that are available. But as far as the America is concerned, we're the land of the ability to produce the new drug, but it also has to do because we have the ability and the finances available for new innovation. And whether that's in therapeutic drugs, whether that's in new gene research that's just going on.
Oh, yeah, but they're against stem cell research.
To allow for innovation patent protections for the first initial years of the drug.
All I can say is I'm not surprised that these are not issues that were brought up last night. Gordon, you got any last, or Jesus, I should say, any last words?
By their works, you will know them. Christians have to live the golden rule as well as talk about it.
Thank you very much for your call. We got to go to a commercial break, but when we come back, I'm going to be playing some of the speeches, some words from McCain, John McCain, and Rudolph Giuliani. And there will always be a debate, of course, between Tom and me and you. All you have to do is call in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And as we go to commercial, we'll hear more from Yikes McGee. We got a president so bad. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, what's going on?
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties cause he could. Struck us all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout, we'll all feel better in the morning. Compassionate conservative, my ass, and executions unsurpassed. Surplus gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he gonna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
See if this sounds familiar. A sour and rabidly partisan Vietnam vet named John O'Neill is plucked from obscurity by the Republican White House to be used as an attack dog against John Kerry. O'Neill creates a hokey citizens group as a political front for no other purpose than to pound Kerry about his war service. But the assault I'm describing is not this year's effort by O'Neill to ambush Kerry with a dummy operation he has labeled Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Rather, I'm talking about O'Neill's first tour of duty in service to a Republican president's campaign, none other than Richard Nixon's. Yes, Tricky Dick, the guy who invented our detestable modern-day politics of personal destruction, was the one who first unleashed O'Neill on Kerry, way back in 1971. Kerry then was the just-returned war hero who was so eloquently speaking out and helping turn public opinion against Nixon's expanding war. So Tricky Dick decided to try killing the messenger through a nasty personal attack on Kerry. Of course, a president can't be seen doing such dirty work himself, so Nixon's top political hatchet man, the infamous Chuck Colson, recruited O'Neill specifically to make the hit on Kerry. Back then, O'Neill called his front group Vietnam Veterans for a Just Peace. But it was the exact same kind of negative scam he's fronting today. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's unclear whether George W. has personally met with O'Neill to urge him on, as Nixon did in 1971, but it's clear that the Bush political operation and funding network is behind O'Neill's smear campaign. Not only is the truth of this coming out, but so is the hilarious knee-slapping irony of watching George trying to shuck and jive around the smear. Since Bush can't even produce proof that he showed up for his National Guard duty in Mississippi, he shouldn't be trying to spit on the five medals that Kerry earned in combat.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your... To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
There's no doubt, let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout, we'll all feel better in the morning. We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger. president so bad. Now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good. Broke the old treaties cause he could. Struts all around like a hood. Got us in no conservative, my ass, and executions unsurpassed, surplus gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he gonna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. This is the week of the Republican National Convention. In honor of that, we are honoring the demonstrators that have appeared by the hundreds of thousands in New York City by playing Yikes McGee's song, We Got a President So Bad. And by the way, if you want to see Yikes McGee's music, all you have to do is go to his website, yikesmcgee.com, yikesmcgee.com, and check out his music. But right now, of course, it's Election Tuesday, and I'm arguing with Tom Robbins. He is the state chair of the Utah College Republicans, and we're talking about the speeches last night given by Rudolph Giuliani and John McCain. And I've been getting a lot of your comments on the blog. I want to read some of them out loud because I think you make some good points. Fred in New York City addressed my complaint or question or challenge to the Democratic Party, saying that they need to go negative. Fred writes, Mark, I don't think the Democrats need to go negative. They just need to start talking. I don't know how much you can even talk about the Bush record without sounding negative. There's no need to try to be negative. Well, I guess, Fred, here's my problem. Kerry is going out and he is talking, and you can see on page A27 of the Washington Post, maybe A6, you can hear Kerry talk about health care and talk about the deficit and talk about the environment and talk about what he plans to do for this country, and it's getting virtually no press. What gets press, what people want to hear, is the negative personal attacks. Swift boat ads, they ran a relatively small buy and got all over the news. Negative news, negative attacks make the news, and here we have a press where we've got some press trying to basically be sensational, and that's most of them, and then we've got the right-wing press, people like Fox News that are trying to distort things to support the Republican Party, and in that kind of atmosphere, I'm afraid only negative attacks can get through. It's not that the Democrats aren't saying positive things, it's that the press really isn't reporting them. Tom, you there?
Mark, your strategy is that you want Kerry to talk more, to be a little bit more articulate and get across his message. I wish the same thing. I honestly believe that if he would talk about his record in the United States Senate, the last 20 years, in 2003, he was, by a nonpartisan group, labeled and touted as the most liberal member of the United States Senate.
Wrong!
More liberal.
Wrong.
Than,
what group?
More liberal than Senator Kennedy. And the last time when Mondale ran, when the Democratic Party went with such a liberal, we can see what happened there. Let's have Kerry
Wait, wait Tom, hold on.
In his convention speech talking about his voting record. I have yet to talk to a Democrat yet when I say, okay, you're supporting Kerry. What is the largest or biggest or most important thing that Kerry did as far as legislative substantial work when he was served as United States Senator? I have yet to hear an answer from anyone I've talked to in all the days I've been recruiting on college.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the main things he did is when he broke with the Democratic Party under Clinton to support a balanced budget. I'd say about half the Democrats supported Clinton in this, and half didn't. And he broke with the more liberal groups and said, you know what, we've got to make sure that people like you, Tom, don't have to keep paying for these huge debts we're under. And I think that's a very significant thing that John Kerry did. But I got to deal with two things you said. One, if we want to talk about issues, the best way to do that is to have debates. between John Kerry and George Bush. And, of course, George Bush has refused that. And maybe he'll get to some later. He probably will. But weekly debates, you want issue-filled stuff, Americans to really find out what the candidates support, George Bush should accept John Kerry's invitation to do debates. And, of course, he refuses to do that. And I can't let go this most liberal in the Senate lie in 2003 because I've heard it too many times. Tom, what's the group? What's the group they call them the most liberal?
Wasn't it the American Conservative Union? Wasn't that it, the ACU?
The American Conservative Union called Kerry the most liberal. All right, I will look up that one. I've looked up the Americans for Democratic Action, and guess what? Kerry was in the middle of the pack. He was the average Democrat in the median. I've looked up the National Journal, also not there. I'm always wondering what the source is for this thing that they're throwing out in their spin, and I'm sorry that the spin that they gave you in their little talking points didn't include it. I will check how the conservatives rate Kerry, though, of course, how the conservatives rate Kerry is a little bit suspect. But let's go to a caller now. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Hi, Mark. It's Ed from New Jersey.
Hey, Ed from New Jersey. Long time no hear.
It's good to have a fellow conservative. How are you doing, sir?
Okay, just fine.
Take me on.
Sure. First of all, I just want to say I'm beaming after last night. I thought it was a great night for Republicans and George Bush. I thought Giuliani's speech, you know, I watched it already two times on replays, and I just thought it encapsulates exactly the reason why even people who have voted Democrat in the past should vote for George Bush this time.
Because Giuliani was good on September 11th, people should vote for George Bush. Can you explain that to me, Ed?
Because of his speech, because of the text of his speech, I think he hit all the points of exactly why George Bush is the right person at the right time in terms of standing up and basically making the war on terror from a defensive war to an offensive war, basically saying to take the fight to them and in opposition to a more lukewarm approach offered by the Democrats.
Okay, well, here's my problem, Ed. When you say take the war to them, I noticed that most Republicans seem to have trouble with pronouns, them, the war. Tell me, who are them? I think them is the people that attacked us. I think it's Al-Qaeda. I think it's Osama bin Laden, who, of course, George Bush let go at Tora Bora, not purposely, but incompetently, let them go. We, of course, have taken troops out of special forces, out of Afghanistan, to go to Iraq. Who is the them that we're fighting? Is it Al-Qaeda, the people that attacked us, or is it Saddam Hussein?
It's the Islamic fascists.
Are they all the same?
They've been under attack since 1993. Disenfranchised people in Islamic countries who have been basically fed propaganda because they have repressive regimes, and those regimes basically, through propaganda, make all their hatred towards the outside, much like Hitler did.
Okay, now, Ed, I'm going to agree with you. Now, hold on one second. I'm going to agree with you. There are definitely, there's the source. In fact, this actually differs, I think, from what McCain said, which says they hate our values, which I think is very simplistic and not even accurate. But I think you're right, Ed. I think that there are disenfranchised masses in Arab countries who are very unhappy by their authoritarian rulers and are striking out because we're supporting those authoritarian rulers. But right. you're not going to think of it that way, are you?
I'm certainly not stating as clearly as Rudy Giuliani did last night.
Well, see, I actually think you're stating it more clearly because Rudolph Giuliani did not define the them, and neither did John McCain. And I thought it was a nice little rhetorical twist. It's they are bad, they hate us, they're trying to kill us. Who are they? If it's Al-Qaeda, I agree. If it's Saddam Hussein.
It's Al-Qaeda, though. We could have eliminated Al-Qaeda, you know, a week before 9/11, and 9/11 still would have happened. And it wouldn't have changed the fact that we were attacked by these same people, I think the them is just a very complicated answer. And so in the midst of a political campaign, I could see your problem with the pronoun. But it's quite simple that there is a movement, and it's not limited to Al-Qaeda, and that movement is... if you go through the enumeration in Rudy Giuliani's speech where he said exactly why getting rid of Saddam Hussein. I think
this is my problem, Ed.
More to the point.
Here is my problem. Okay, I agree with you, Ed, that there is a movement out there that it's largely based in Islamic fundamentalism. I think it's also based, just as you said, Ed, in disenfranchised masses who are mad at their dictatorships. I should note that virtually every one of these dictatorships has been supported by the United States, mostly Republicans in the past, and I think that's a bad thing. And I agree with you, but what I don't understand is how these disenfranchised masses that hate us now, okay, one, how that has any connection to Saddam Hussein, and two, how our invasion of Iraq, a country that was a secular country, bad guy, no question, Saddam Hussein, how that is going to make al-Qaeda less likely to attack us. Can you explain that to me?
Sure. I mean, I think you keep getting caught, and I hear this all the time. It's, sure, Saddam Hussein was a secular regime, but he was right in there. I mean, he refused
to work with Osama bin Laden, and Osama bin Laden refused to work with him. They hated each other.
Saddam Hussein just $3,000 in Israel who would blow themselves up to disrupt Israel. When we establish a democracy in Iraq, that seed will begin to grow, and we'll be able to have a foundation in the Middle East, which will be able to show others around there that there is an option to terrorism. There's an option to just distraughtfully blowing yourself up.
Tom,
it's
that's
the
a spurious
tired record of blame America first.
Now, wait a minute.
We need to be nicer. We need to be more sensitive. And all of a sudden, these terrorists will just go away. The Republican Party doesn't believe that.
Well, let's talk about our fault. Was it our fault when Ronald Reagan gave money to Osama bin Laden and other groups of Mujahideen in Afghanistan? Not that he didn't do it for good reasons, but was that a mistake in hindsight? Was it a mistake for our government to support Saddam Hussein in the 1980s and the early 90s? Was it a mistake for Dick Cheney to sell Saddam Hussein oil equipment well into the late 1990s? Was it a mistake to support the Shah of Iran and teach him how to torture his people? Was it a mistake today to support all the sheikhs of Saudi Arabia, to give billions of dollars to Egypt, where the people totally hate us because we're supporting the Egyptian dictatorship? Is our support of dictatorships across the globe a mistake, or isn't it?
I guess we could go dig a hole in the backyard and stick our head in and pretend that the rest of the world isn't this dynamic thing that's changing. But I just don't think that would get us any safer. Maybe al-Qaeda wouldn't be the problem. It would be someone else.
Well, exactly. But
all those things you listed, we did it for a very specific reason, to stop a very specific problem.
You're right about that. You're right about that. It kind of reminds me of the woman who swallowed a fly, and then she swallowed a spider to catch the fly, and then she swallowed a frog to catch the spider, and then swallowed a cat to catch the frog. And I don't remember all the animals, but I do remember at the end she swallowed a horse, and she's dead, of course. I mean, you're right. We supported the Shah to stop the communism, and we supported the Mujahideen to stop communism, and we supported Iraq to stop Iran, and then we supported Saudi Arabia to be a counterbalance to Iraq. And we're always playing geopolitics, and we're always teaching torture. And of course, we know that torture.
So the alternative is what? Not
the alternative is to support democracy, and to do so by helping their own people. Their own. For example, in 1991. After the Gulf War, the Shiites of Iraq, not us, the Shiites of Iraq, the Kurds of Iraq, they themselves began a revolution against Saddam Hussein. That was the perfect time under George Bush Sr. to shoot down Saddam's planes, but don't invade, let the people themselves win their own revolution. We would have been heroes in the world. We were helping them.
You know,
we didn't support them then. We can't impose it.
They would have said, we had a coalition to just do a specific duty, and that was to kick Saddam out of court.
Yeah.
How you go against the world community? How does
the
France
coalition
feel
that's,
about
that's,
this?
That's a straw man.
Uprising.
That's a straw man.
Our names would have been clamming to the streets, and this radio show would have been filled with, we had a mandate, we've stepped out of bounds.
No.
George Bush Sr.'s a war.
Well, I didn't have this radio show.
The liberals are concerned.
13 years ago, but that's
that
a straw man.
10 years later, they did that as it was. It would have been there 10 years ago, and then we would have really had a Vietnam.
Well, I'm afraid we have a Vietnam now. Tell me this. Why are we in Iraq right now? Okay? If the goal was to get rid of weapons of mass destruction, there are none. If the goal was to get rid of Saddam Hussein, he's gone. Why are we there now, given that the people don't want us there?
We're there for as long as Iraqi people need the security forces
but
that we can provide.
They don't want our security forces.
That's not
98% of Iraqis.
If Alawi told us to leave, we would leave.
Alawi was our chosen guy. There have been no elections.
And if he wants us to leave, we will leave.
Well, you know, if Diem in Vietnam, our chosen dictator... Well, hold on, hold on. If Diem, our chosen dictator in Vietnam, told us to leave, we might leave too. But Alawi is a creature of us. He's not a creature of Iraq. Shouldn't democracy win the day? I mean, Giuliani, I agree, gave a very powerful speech for democracy. I agree with his rhetoric. What I disagree with is the practice of how this president is using this rhetoric. Well, George Bush doesn't support democracy around the world. If he did,
yes, he does. Oh, that's absolutely
no, 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 no. Let me give you three. Let me give you
a soundbite.
All right, no, no. Let me give you. All right.
Of it is a long, hard road.
Now wait a minute.
Just when in other countries and examples, even in the birth of our own democracy, much struggling was. It wasn't always popular. It wasn't always fair. But in the end, the price that was paid, the dear price of the blood, was able to pave the way to have the most best democracy ever had. Iraq won't be perfect, and we won't be there tomorrow, but it's getting there.
Okay, let me make my point, and then I'm going to give you a whole commercial break, and then both of you can come at me, all right? Here's my point. You just accused me of saying a soundbite when I said George Bush doesn't care about democracy. Let's talk about the facts, all right? Sudan, there's an ongoing genocide. We're doing virtually nothing there. There are two dictators that we are supporting that get no attention in the news. These are next, by the way. These are the Saddam Husseins of 10 years from now, and you heard it first on the Inside Scoop. One is Equatorial Guinea, and one is Gabon. These are non-Islamic countries. They are African countries with dictators that George Bush has been helping and funding and supporting. Why? Because they have oil. The only reason we attacked Saddam Hussein is because we couldn't get oil from Iraq. We support dictators across the globe, Saudi Arabia, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, as long as they sell us oil. And we don't attack dictators like North Korea that have nothing to do with oil. If you try to say who George Bush supports or doesn't support by looking at democracy or dictatorship, you can't possibly figure it out. You want to know the best countries, you want to know how to find out who is George Bush's allies? See how much oil they sell the United States. I'm going to give both of you a chance to respond to me right after this commercial break.
There's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. Compassionate conservative.
It's time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to those in the news who had their tongues going 100 miles per hour, but who forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober goes to Washington lobbyist Frank Keating. He's the former right-wing governor of Oklahoma who tried to get a top political job in the Bush regime, but ethical problems disqualified him. So Frank sank to a lower ethical strata, hiring on to hustle legislative favors for life insurance corporations. Appallingly, Frank recently stood up for several insurance firms that are engaged in a shabby insider deal to fleece young American soldiers who are on their way to war in Iraq. Often posing as military instructors in personal finance, insurance agents from these corporations have duped unwitting young troops into buying rip-off life insurance policies that are unneeded and nearly worthless. It's an abominable, totally unethical act of war profiteering. But here came Keating, the industry mouthpiece, to blame the victims. Someone who is mature enough to fight and quite possibly die for their country should be freely able to decide how much and what kind of life insurance they should have, he said. What a goober. He knows that this is not about free markets or free will. These low-ranking soldiers are set up for the insurance predators. The sales pitch often comes as part of compulsory military classes. The soldiers are not even told they're buying insurance, and many of the insurance agents are retired military officers. These 18, 19, 20-year-old soldiers, conditioned to obeying the commands of senior officers, believe that retired Colonel so-and-so is telling them something they must do, so they sign without questioning. This is Jim Hightower saying, yet Keating is still lobbying Congress to let his corporate clients continue picking the pockets of the underpaid grunts heading to Iraq. Is this the freedom they're being asked to die for? I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Passionate conservative, my ass, and execution's unsurpassed. Surplus gone so fast, divided, not united.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the Republican National Convention, and I got two Republicans on the line. I have my guest. He is Tom Robbins, the state chair of the Utah College National Republicans, and I have a caller, Ed from New Jersey. And before we went to break, I described how I think you can tell whether a country, George Bush, will support it or not. He won't support France, which is a democracy, obviously, or Germany, but he will support countries like Equatorial Guinea and Gabon, dictatorships, as long as they have oil. Ed and Tom had argued that it was all about democracy. Largely, that was Giuliani's argument last night. But if you look at our allies around the world, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, you don't see a lot of democracy there. And I think it kind of puts a lie to the idea that we all went to Iraq because of democracy. Again, I support, as I think 99.9% of Americans do, I support the war against al-Qaeda. I support the war on terrorism, to the extent we're talking about the people that attacked us, but these wars for oil, I just can't support them. But I did promise I would give Ed and Tom significant time to respond to me. Who wants to go first?
Typically clear. In Iraq, your strategy is if the people, quote-unquote, because of a poll, don't want us there, we need to pull out immediately, we need to transfer power, we need to hit the high road, we need to get more of the military operations done by the Iraqi military and the new chain police force. That's your point of view. Now, in Korea...
Well, just to be clear, you said my point of view. No, I think that we need to stay there, like Kerry says, until we can get elections and get some semblance of normality, but that should be done awfully quick, and I don't think it should have been postponed this long.
Right, but you basically want it as soon as possible to get that power to the Iraqi people. I think that's what George Bush wants. In Korea, we have spent billions of dollars there. Thousands of Americans have lost their lives. It's been 40 to 50 some odd years since real conflict in the Korean War. And George W. Bush has come forth and said, we are not going to lower the amount of total troops on the North and South Korean border, the demilitarized zone, but what we are do is we're going to allow for the South Korean government, who can sustain itself and who has a very well-trained and working army, to be able to take a larger role, to be able to have more of their military involved, and we're going to bring some of our troops home.
Tom, you're bringing up another issue.
How could we be doing this?
No, wait. Tom, you're bringing up another issue.
Korea, they're the ones that are demanding, especially the younger ones who weren't around in the Korean War and don't remember what it was like. They're saying, hey, we want the Americans to play less of a role. We're doing that. We're handing the power over to the South Korean government, letting them defend themselves more, and getting our soldiers out of harm's way. And you're saying, well, why are we pulling our troops out of Korea? Because we're doing exactly what you want to be done.
Now, see, Tom, you're changing the subject here. I don't believe we should reward North Korea, a country that has a missile that can attack Los Angeles and that developed nuclear weapons because George Bush was busy in Iraq. I don't think we should reward that behavior by withdrawing American troops. But that's not the question I posed. I posed, why is it that the countries we support are the countries that sell us oil and the countries we don't support? We don't go into Liberia to stop the vicious child army there. We don't go into Sudan to stop the genocide. We don't do anything for countries that don't sell us oil. That's how you can judge Bush policy. It's got nothing to do with democracy. You haven't addressed that argument.
I agree, actually, Mark, with some of the things you said. I think if there was an argument to not vote for Bush, it might be some of those countries that you pointed out. However, has Kerry been clear that he, first of all, has Kerry been clear that he wouldn't support those, that he would take action against those?
Well, for example, in his...
From a differentiated point of view. I mean,
in his convention speech, well, just a second, in his convention speech,
okay,
in his convention speech, Kerry specifically mentioned one of those countries, the country who I think has done more harm to us in the war on terror than any other country on earth, and that country is Saudi Arabia. They funded the war on terror, they have taught through their madrasa schools, they have taught people like Osama bin Laden throughout the Islamic world, they have fomented hate against the United States. 50 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis, and there's only one country that John Kerry pointed out in his convention speech that he wouldn't kowtow to, and that was Saudi Arabia, and I thought that was a brave thing to say.
I think Saudi Arabia, as a country, for the most part, has been pretty good to the United States.
Really?
A very valuable ally in the Middle East. But I agree with you. There's some. I think it's a much more complicated thing. I think if we were tomorrow to declare war on Saudi Arabia, it would be a disaster.
Well, I'm not arguing we declare war on Saudi Arabia tomorrow. What I'm arguing is that we should use our policy, all right, well, for one thing, I think we need alternative energy so they don't control us. And that's another thing that I think Kerry would be leagues above George Bush. George Bush, oil company guy, he wants to support the oil companies wherever he can. Kerry is someone is there any doubt in the two of your mind, and I know both of you are partisan Republicans, but can I get both of you to agree with me that when it comes to fuel cells, alternative energy, having cars run on soybeans, all this new technology, is there any doubt in your mind that John Kerry would support it far more than George Bush?
It's kind of like supporting a clean environment. I don't know anyone who wouldn't support it.
Well, George Bush.
It's the idea that somehow the federal government can have such an impact in that area. If it took 5 years for us to develop an alternative fuel so that we were not dependent on oil, I don't care who the president is, whoever it would be, who would do it.
Well, no, I don't think so, because right now we still are getting oil. We're getting it from Saudi Arabia. We don't see the problem is this: the oil companies don't pay for the war. Okay, they don't pay for almost 1,000 Americans' lives lost. They don't pay hundreds of billions of dollars that we're fighting to get the oil out of Iraq. They're not paying for that. So when they just look at their costs versus the cost of some of these alternative fuels, they say, "Oh, well, it's cheaper to send ships over the Persian Gulf and bring the oil." What
it's
I'm
so,
saying
so
is that if we
that we went into Iraq,
well,
wait,
hold on. I'll give you a second time. What I'm saying is that instead of spending $200 billion on Iraq, if we would spend $2 billion, 1/100th of that, on promoting some of these fuel cells, and I tell you, I was in a car just 2 months ago. I was very impressed. It ran entirely on soybeans. Entirely on soybeans, largely because the state of Maryland, which is a liberal state, helps to subsidize the special gasoline, which costs about $3 a gallon instead of the $2 we're paying. All right? If government would subsidize alternative fuel, we wouldn't have to go to war for oil, and I think that's a very strong reason to vote for Kerry this fall. But Tom and Ed,
if the government could replace their dependency on oil, I don't see any. I just don't see that it wouldn't happen.
Well,
I don't care who's the president. I don't care what their connections are.
Well, why
aren't
they doing it? Jimmy Carter talked about this in the 1970s, and he started some of the programs for alternative energy. Ronald Reagan ended them, all right? There were a few under the Clinton era. I will agree with you, Clinton didn't do enough, and George Bush stopped them entirely.
You want to talk about the legacy of the Democrats and Jimmy Carter, I mean, that's an awesome place to start, especially since
Carter was lousy on the economy.
We've had long discussions about the misery index and the fact that people thought that America
I agree
was
with
on
you,
a downward
Tom.
Slope
Tom.
And that.
Hold on. I agree with you. Carter had bad economic problems, but he was a visionary with regard to alternative fuel. That's all I argued.
I'm an electrical engineer, and I mean, it's just a matter of, the amount of cost to the amount of fuel you get. There's just, nothing is as cheap as oil.
That's right. And it would harm oil company profits.
For the government to subsidize oil, you're saying the government should just pay for the energy resources of the country.
That's right.
You're talking about a huge tax burden.
We spent $200 billion. It's going to be more. It looks like it'll probably be $500 billion before we leave, on the war in Iraq to have an oil source. I'm arguing for 1/100th of that, $2 billion for alternative energy. We already give money to NIH, National Institute of Health, for which is why the pharmaceutical companies really shouldn't complain. We do it for medical research, and some of the best scientific research we do comes from the government. Similarly, if we were to do as the state of Maryland did and subsidize the fuel from soybeans, I think in 5 years we could have all cars running on soybeans. Halliburton wouldn't be happy. George Bush's oil friends wouldn't be happy. But we wouldn't have to go to war for oil like we do again and again and again. And that, I think, above all other reasons, is the primary reason to vote for John Kerry this fall.
You know, that cheaper alternative, if you feel that the only reason why we're in Iraq is because of oil.
I do.
And, you know, definitely it's true because, wow, our gas prices are so low now. But anyway, Anwar is a lot cheaper to drill than going into Iraq.
But Anwar lasts 6 months.
You'd be interested in going into Alaska where there's the technology has already been developed to cleanly bring that oil out.
That's
and
6 months.
Catastrophic pictures of just the devastation, the environmental impact are out of whack, out of line, and unrealistic.
Tom, our time's about up. Anwar would give us 6 months of oil. I'm talking about a permanent solution to the problem. Ed, you've hung on a long time and taken me on. I always appreciate when people who disagree with me take me on. I want to thank you for calling into the Inside Scoop.
No problem. Thanks.
Okay. I do want to read a few of the comments on the blog before our time is up. One is addressed to you, Tom, but so you only got about 30 seconds to answer. Sorry about that. It's from Jenny. Jenny says, Tom, give me a break. The drug companies in Canada are the same companies that are being used in America. How could you possibly say they may not be as safe in Canada, but they are in this country? Go ahead. Can you answer that?
It's just a matter of being safe, but you also want to protect the investment that researchers have made and that people within the drug and pharmaceutical industry have done as far as dedicating years of their lives to the development of these drugs. And
okay.
There are things that can be done.
But
I remember U2 singer Bono, who's not a conservative, praised George W. Bush as far as the war on AIDS in Africa, saying that he just doesn't talk the talk, but he's also been able to walk the walk.
Okay, you're changing the subject. It seems to me you agree with Jenny that the safety argument is just, there's no argument at all. It's a silly argument, and Bush shouldn't make it. You can make arguments about investment, but there is no argument about safety, and I agree with you.
Well, we're going to look and see what the FDA report comes out, specifically look at different things, because you want to make sure that there's the same level of standards. I would predict, though, that in the future there's going to be a greater cooperation between the northern and borders with Canada and being able to have a better cooperation. I see it moving in that direction.
I sure hope so, Tom, and I do want to read a few more blog comments, so I'm going to have to say goodbye to you and have 1 minute left on my own. Thanks so much for coming again. We always appreciate on Election Tuesday. I know my listeners appreciate having spirited argument, and you always give us that on the Inside Scoop. Thanks so much for coming on, Tom.
All right. Well, we'll be watching the convention, and we'll talk about it next week.
And I'll be reporting on it. I do want to read a few more of your blog comments. We got a comment here from Fred in New York City. He writes on Giuliani, I always thought Giuliani had character and a moral compass. He gave the nation strength on 9/11. Not only that, he turned New York City around. I didn't always agree with the man, but I respected him. After seeing him on C-SPAN last night supporting Bush, I lost all respect for him. Party loyalty is one thing, but when you back fearmongers because you think it will forge your career, you're not a person of character. On that, I definitely agree with you. This is a man who's running for president in 2008, and so he's got to go and he's got to get his bona fides out there, and that's what he's doing. We didn't get a chance to go into any of the McCain and Giuliani speeches. I think that, well, that bodes well, I think, for the quality of the debate, at least I hope you think so, between Tom and me and Ed, who came on as well. But most of what they said we talked about here, most of the complaints or praises, I think were made. We may play some of this tomorrow. We'll have to see what other speeches come in. But my problem with Giuliani and McCain's speech is not that they're wrong, but that they don't define their terms. They say we have to fight a war. Okay, I agree. We should fight a war on the people who attacked us, not on a country that never attacked us. And if we'd done that, we wouldn't be having all the problems we have now. We'll go out with the demonstration song of Yikes McGee. If you want to buy his music, go to www.yikesmcgee.com and take a look at it. Tomorrow we'll be back. We'll be talking about the speeches of tonight, telling you all about the Republican National Convention. We watch so you don't have to. And I'm going to conclude, as I'm starting to conclude a lot lately, by quoting the words of the president I hope we have next, John Kerry, who said, "Don't love your country right or wrong. That's like loving your mother, drunk or sober. Love your country when it's right, and when it's wrong, put it right." This is Mark Levine signing off.
Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout, we'll all feel better in the morning. We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger. So bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties cause he could. Struck us all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble.
Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. Compassionate conservative, my ass, and execution's unsurpassed, surplus gone.